BBC Jane Eyre by Charlotte Bronte. Screenplay by Sandy Welsh. Starring Ruth Wilson, Toby Stevens, Lorraine Ashbourne, Pam Ferris, Tara Fitzgerald, Georgie Henley, and Richard McCabe. Directed by Susanna White. A young girl in a red sari walks across a vast, untouched desert, leaving a trail of footprints behind her. Grey clouds gather over her head as she sits on the ridge of a dune, allowing the sand to slip through her fingers. She looks out at the endless untouched desert, its ridges and furrows undulating into the distance. The girl is fresh-faced and young, with bright eyes and a smattering of freckles across her nose. Now the sun begins to set behind a darkening ridge. Now the girl's staring at herself in a mirror. She's in a cold room in a drab grey dress. In her lap is a book open at a page showing the picture of a desert. Other pages are filled with sketches of exotic animals and faraway places. She closes the book. It's called Voyages and Travels Illustrated.
Where is the rat?
She's behind the curtain, where she always hides.
An older boy smacks her in the face with the book. Finding blood on her forehead, she's overcome with rage and hits the boy on the back. She pummels him to the floor.
Mama! Dana's knocked me down!
Take her up to the Red Room immediately.
Child, that's a devil in her! I've always said!
No! Not the Red Room! No! No! Not the Red Room! No!
Jane's carried up the stairs by two maids, then locked in a room bathed in red light.
Don't come back, Uncle Reed. Please don't come back. Uncle Reed, please don't come back. Please.
She looks up to see a man with a demonic expression sitting up in the bed staring at her. Jane's mother and siblings pose for a painting.
Come along, John.
Yes, come on, John. We haven't got all day.
Don't worry. I won't shoot you. Unless we don't like the painting, that is.
The artist turns to Jane, who's sitting in the window.
Hello. Shouldn't you be in the portrait? There's still plenty of room.
Jane Eyre.
She's not part of the family.
Looking hurt, Jane lowers herself back into her seat and goes back to her book. Now her aunt's reading a letter.
It's no use looking at me like that, Jane. I have tried my hardest, but you made it impossible. I tried to carry out my dear husband's wishes, but you have made it impossible. You know you have. You have deliberately made it impossible for me to love you. Say something, unnatural child!
You have not tried very hard. My uncle's dying wish was that you treat me as one of your children. You have not tried to.
You dare to tell me?
That is why he haunts the Red Room, because you've disobeyed him. And on the day you die, God will know who's telling the truth. Whatever you or I say now,
Come on, Miss Jane. You have a visitor. You must look your best.
I have tried so very hard. You cannot believe how hard I have tried. But there is the devil in the child.
What is your name, child?
Jane Eyre, sir.
Do you know, Jane Eyre, what happens to little children when they die?
They go to heaven.
And what happens to disobedient, deceitful girls when they die?
They go to hell.
So what must you do to avoid this terrible fate?
I must take care to keep in good health and not to fall ill, sir.
Your aunt tells me that you are a deceitful child. Is that true, Jane Eyre?
I am not a liar.
So do you say your aunt is a liar?
Crows fly above a horse-drawn carriage that's travelling through a snowstorm in the evening light. It arrives at a large stone country house. Now Jane's being carried by a man through a dark corridor. A woman lights the way holding a gas lamp. Jane notices pairs of well-worn boots lined up along a wall and coats hanging on pegs above them. She's taken into a cavernous dormitory where small figures lie asleep under blankets. Jane looks up fearfully at the damp, vaulted stone ceiling as she's led to an empty bed. The woman pulls down the covers and Jane gets in. When the adults have gone, Jane looks over at a girl in the bed next to her who's awake. The girl smiles warmly at her, and Jane sighs contentedly before closing her eyes. A woman's ringing a bell over Jane's face. The girls stand to attention at the end of their beds. At the second bell, they walk over to a table where two bowls of water are waiting. Jane looks on in shock as the girls crack the thin layer of ice at the top of the water before beginning to wash. Clothed in identical plain dresses and bonnets, the girls are now in a large hall. They get to their feet as a well-dressed woman and two girls come in. They're followed by the man who recently visited Jane's aunt. He nods to the girls to sit down.
Ah, Jane Eyre. How could I forget? Step out here, Jane.
Everyone turns to look at her. Nervously, Jane makes her way slowly down the aisle, her head bowed. The man peers down at her with an intimidating expression.
Jane Eyre, I'm sorry to have to tell you, is a liar. The lesson of the day will be that lying is a sin, that all liars deserve to be shunned by their fellows.
Another girl hangs a sign around Jane's neck, which reads, Liar.
Stand on that stool, Jane.
Jane climbs up onto the high stool in front of the girls.
You will stay there until midnight, and you will not eat or drink, but bow to beg God's forgiveness for your sin.
Later, Jane's still standing alone on the stool in the dark hall beneath a large fresco when the rest of the girls come in and file past her in two lines. One of the girls thrusts a piece of bread into Jane's hand as she passes by. Jane gazes down at the identical bonnets. The next day, she's looking through her book with another girl.
I wish I could escape to one of these places. Somewhere where it's warm.
I believe you will. But you'll have to work hard. We have to accept we've been left here by our families to fend for ourselves. If you take advantage of the education here, if you are not too rebellious, and if you are patient, then you will find your way out. We will both work our hardest and pray that God spares us until we're grown up.
And then what do we do? I think when we grow up, we have to be teachers. How do we ever get out of here, Helen?
We advertise.
Now, the hall's filled with girls lying on makeshift beds. As they cough, a woman walks up and down with a lantern. In the dorm, Jane tosses about fitfully on her bed, then turns over to find Helen gone. She sits up. Now she's wandering through the gloomy corridor, carrying a lantern to light her way. Peering over a balcony, she gazes down at the sick girls beneath the fresco. She finds Helen in a chapel-like room, in a bed, next to an altar. Jane goes over to her, puts down her lamp and unwraps some bread. She offers it to Helen, but Helen shakes her head weakly. Helen reaches for her hand.
Very cold, Jane. Come on under my covers.
Jane climbs into bed next to Helen. And the two friends hold hands. Their heads nearly touching, Jane gives her a weak smile. The next morning, a woman arrives with a lantern. Helen is pale and still, and the woman separates the two girls' hands. Jane wakes to find the woman crossing Helen's arms across her chest.
No. No. God can't have her. He can't take her.
God has already taken her, Jane. You must be brave.
Another day, and leaves fall like snow past the tower of a grey stone church. The girls traipse into the building two by two. Outside, numerous simple wooden coffins lie piled up around freshly dug graves in the cemetery. Jane, sitting at the edge of the graveyard, by two recently covered graves, drawing a picture of the church in charcoal. The wind buffets the pages of her drawing book as she puts the finishing touches to two graves in her picture. Then she turns the page. Sitting in exactly the same spot, bathed in sunshine, Jane is now an adult. She sweeps a watercolour brush across the page, then looks up for a moment.
girls.
The cover song cast shadows in the flowers.
She's addressing a group of girls wearing plain pinafores and bonnets, who are each drawing a picture in charcoal. She smiles down at them, then looks up at a headstone nearby. It's engraved, Helen Burns, 1817 to 1829. She leads her class back into the school.
Come on, girls, hurry up now.
In the great hall, as the girls and adults dine, the teachers sit at a long table beneath the fresco. An older woman receives the post.
Miss Eyre, there appears to be a letter for you, Miss Eyre.
The women at the table all stare at Jane as the letter is passed down to her. She shoves it into her pocket. Later, sitting alone on the low, thick branch of a tree, a little distance away from the school, she opens it.
If Miss J.E. is in a position to give satisfactory references as to character and competency, then we will be happy to engage her as a governess to Miss Adele Veron, ward of Mr. Rochester of Thornfield Hall.
Now Jane's travelling along a country road on a horse-drawn carriage, sitting next to the driver. The horses trot along in the half-light of the evening past a low, dry stone wall.
Ah, there's Thornfield Hall now, miss. There's always a light burning in the tower.
Nestling in a shallow valley is an enormous, sprawling grey stone country house. A solitary orange light flickers in the window of a tower. The carriage comes to a halt, and Jane makes her way gingerly down to the ground, helped by a footman. Then she sets off through the darkness towards the ominous-looking building. The single light burns on in the tower. A small door opens, and a lantern emerges, held by an unseen person. Jane steps inside. An elderly man leads her up some steps and across a courtyard. She gazes round at the surrounding buildings, noticing the orange light in the tower again.
Are you taking me to Mrs. Fairfax?
The man ignores her and leads her on into a dark hallway. He stops and points.
In there.
Looking back at him, she walks on, then opens a large wooden door. She smiles.
Why, it's Miss Eyre. Oh, at last. Oh, we've been waiting for you for so long.
Oh, I'm Mrs. Fairfax. Welcome to Thornfield. My goodness, Miss Eyre. How hungry you are. You must have been travelling all day. How long is it since you have sat beside the fire and eaten a hearty meal?
Oh, approximately 8 years.
Oh, my goodness. 8 years? Hasn't sat by the fire for 8 years? Oh. 8 years. I'll tell the master that when he gets back from abroad. That will amuse even him. Oh, not that he's without humour, of course. No, certainly not. I remember he used to tell jokes as a child. He keeps himself to himself, but you needn't worry. He's hardly ever at home. Always travelling.
Mrs. Fairfax leads her through the darkness to her room. The next morning, Jane wakes with a smile. She sits up in her carved wooden four-poster bed and goes over to the window. She looks outside, where the winter sun is shining down on a stone staircase leading from one expanse of well-kept lawn to another. Now dressed in a long, simple grey gown with white lace sleeves and collar, Jane makes her way along a path in the garden, past tall, perfectly manicured shrubs. The winter sun casts long shadows on the ground before her. She takes in her beautiful surroundings, then heads down some steps into the courtyard of the great house. She looks up to a window in the tower to see a long red silken scarf tied to the frame. It billows gently in the wind. As Jane heads down some stone steps, Mrs. Fairfax hurries across the courtyard towards her, carrying a jug.
Miss Eyre, oh, you are up early. I hope you slept well.
Yes, thank you.
I was anxious to meet Adele.
Ah, yes. Well, you won't have to wait long.
Does she play up there?
Oh, goodness me, no. No one lives up there.
Oh, I thought I saw someone at the window.
There's only Grace Poole there. She does the laundry.
Ah,
I don't think Miss Adele can wait any longer.
A young girl dressed up in furs and feathers emerges from a theatre-style curtain onto a little stage and bows.
Il est jaloux, je suis coquette.
She sings, "My lover gets jealous, I'm such a flirt. I love pretty dresses, he loves his money. I'm always losing my temper, he's so impossible." Mrs. Fairfax notices that Jane's a little shocked by the performance.
Bon Dieu, bon Dieu. Bonjour, Mademoiselle Jeanne. I'm so very heureuse to faire votre acquaintance.
Enchantée, Adèle. Moi aussi, j'étais impatiente de faire ta connaissance.
Oh, thank goodness we'll be able to understand her. Now you can tell me what she is singing.
Well, I believe it is a romance.
Mm.
The woman is declaring her love for her sweetheart.
Adele takes a bow, and they applaud.
Merci, merci, merci. I will dance another one.
Later, maybe. But first, you'll show me to our schoolroom.
Now in the schoolroom, Jane writes the date in French on a blackboard. It's the 27th of November. Next, Adele writes the date in English. This time, it's the 10th of February. Sometime later, Jane's wandering through the house when she finds a study. She walks over to a desk that's adorned with a globe and a selection of maps. A magnifying glass is lying idle, and next to it is an open notebook. Behind the desk, she pauses to gaze at a small case containing a collection of blue and black butterflies. A pair of stuffed exotic birds are perched on an ornamental branch, and on a nearby dresser is a case of beetles which sits next to some dried mushroom specimens. Now Jane's sitting outside the house, looking out at the countryside. Suddenly, she turns to see the red scarf billowing from a window in the tower. Jane gives the briefest of smiles, then bites her lip as the scarf is buffeted around by the wind. Sometime later, Jane's walking along the bank of a wide stream that runs along the bottom of a shallow valley. A thick mist envelops the path. Now a black horse gallops along the stream path, carrying a rider dressed all in black. Jane continues on her way, unaware that the horse is galloping towards her. Jane crouches down to tie her bootlace, then looks up as a barking hound lollops towards her. She gets to her feet as the dog races past. Then the jet black horse rears up, throwing its rider.
Quiet, pilot!
Damn it.
Are you injured, sir?
Get away from me.
Witch.
Done enough damage.
Cannot think of leaving you until I see you're fit to mount your horse.
You should be at home yourself. Where do you live?
At Thornfield Hall. I can fetch help. I'll be a little while.
A veiled smile crosses his lips. Then he tries to walk to his horse.
Do you think you can bring him over to me?
Jane makes her way through the mud to the horse as it whinnies and paws the ground. She reaches for the reins, but it rears up.
Come over here. Come.
She heads back over to the man, who holds his arm aloft. She slides under it and helps him across the mud to the agitated beast. His shoulder-length black hair is moistened by the mist, and his stern features grimace with pain at every step.
Come here. Come here. Move. Oh, he's...
She takes his cane as he climbs painfully into the saddle. She hands back the cane.
Thank you, miss.
Jane Eyre, sir.
Well, that's what happens when you bewitch a man's horse, Miss Eyre. A lot of pain and cursing.
I did not bewitch your horse, sir. I was waiting for you to go past.
You were hovering, casting spells. Now get off back to Thornfield Hall, if that is indeed where you live.
I do. But I will post my letter first, before I return.
Don't be late back. Miss Jane Eyre.
He sets off down the path at a gallop, pilot running behind him, and Jane watches him for a moment, then carries on her way. She trudges off through the mist, and later, in the dark of night, climbs the steps into the house. The kitchen seems to be bustling with activity.
Ah, Miss Eyre, there you are. What do you think? The master is back.
Mr. Rochester.
A word about his return, as usual. And he had an accident on the road. The doctor is with him in the drawing room now. Adele, come away. Time to bed. Mr. Rochester will see you tomorrow.
Jane spots Pilot in the kitchen. The next day, she looks out of her window to see two men leaving the house.
Miss Eyre, make yourself ready. Master has finished his business for the day and wishes to see you.
Me?
Yes. Oh, no, 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 you must change.
Mrs. Fairfax goes to Jane's wardrobe and pulls out her simple grey dress.
This'll have to do.
Jane stares at her reflection in the mirror and pulls the lace cuffs from beneath the grey sleeves of the dress.
This'll have to do.
She arrives at the top of some steps that lead down into a drawing room. A large fire is burning in the grate, and Rochester is sitting in a chair in front of it. As Jane steps down into the room, Adele spots her.
Ah, Miss Eyre.
Peut-être vous avez une boîte pour Mademoiselle R, Monsieur Rochester?
A boîte for Miss R? Does Miss R require a present?
Excuse me, sir?
Does the governess expect me to have brought her a present back from my travels overseas?
No, sir.
What are you doing standing over there where I can't see you?
Where would you like me to stand, sir?
Here. Sit.
She walks towards the fire to a stool opposite him.
Fond of presents, Miss R?
I hardly know, sir. I have little experience of them.
Never had a present?
I believe they're generally thought pleasant things, sir.
But this frivolous little doll, this true daughter of Paris, they're the stuff of life. Aren't they, my little thought of presents makes her live and breathe?
Monsieur Rochester?
He gestures with his head, and Adele gets to her feet.
Ah, ma boîte, merci, 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 merci.
Quiet, while I talk to Miss R.
While Adele opens her presents, Rochester gulps from his drink.
Where are you from?
Lowood Institution, sir.
How long were you there?
8 years.
I'm amazed you survived, you're so small. Didn't they feed you?
No, sir.
And how do you find yourself here and not still there?
I advertised, sir.
Of course you did. What of your family?
I have none, sir.
None whatsoever? Friends?
None, sir.
None at all?
I had a friend once, but she died a long time ago, sir.
You're lucky, Miss R. If you do not love another living soul, then you'll never be disappointed.
Yes, sir.
Jane lowers her eyes.
Adele tells me that you play the piano brilliantly.
I play a little, sir.
Of course, a little. That's what they all say. Go over there and play.
She gets up and goes over to the piano. Rochester frowns as she plays, then turns to a portfolio of watercolours. Amidst the landscapes is one of a woman's face buried in the moor, shafts of light emanating from her head.
Enough! Yes, you're right, you do play a little. These yours?
Yes, sir.
These are interesting. Are the ideas all yours?
Yes, sir.
Were you happy when you painted these?
Regardez-moi, Monsieur Rochester.
I was fully occupied.
Avec ma nouvelle robe.
I was not unhappy.
Monsieur Rochester. What do you think of me, Monsieur? Do you think I look beautiful? Shall I dance for you?
Monsieur, what are you thinking of? It's very late. Adele should be in bed.
Jane leads Adele out.
My foot hurts like the blazes.
Good night, sir.
Later, Jane's helping in the kitchen.
So, what did you think of Master?
He is very changeable.
Yes. But he has had disappointments in his life. I hope you will forgive his rough and ready ways. You will not leave. I've grown used to you. I hope he won't scare you away.
I'm not scared of rough manners.
He will be gone soon. He never stays for more than a few days at a time.
Now, a woman carrying a jug passes Jane in a corridor.
Afternoon, miss.
Jane watches her walk away. Later, she's looking through a nature book in the library.
Monsieur, come here.
Jane replaces the book and follows him through to his study.
Sit. Not you, pilot. Monsieur, excuse me, I'm used to giving orders and having them obeyed. Sit, if you please.
She takes a seat opposite him, keeping her head lowered.
I beg your pardon, sir. I did not ask your permission to read the books.
Permission? To read the books? You're a thinking, intelligent woman, aren't you? Why ever would you need to ask permission? Well, who else is to read them? Adele? The venerable Fairfax? I'd more likely find Pilot poring over the flora and fauna of the South American flatlands. So, anyway, talk.
Talk, sir?
Yes, talk, if you please. See how I'm learning to be polite. Had a tedious day of mortgages and share prices, and I would like to be entertained.
Entertained, sir?
Miss Eyre, can we proceed? When I'm tired, I tend to dwell on my darker thoughts.
I would like to entertain you, sir. I'm not sure it would interest you.
A smile. A very small one. Mere glimpse of a smile. At last, tell me your thoughts, I command you.
I was just thinking, sir, it's not many employers would ask the opinion of someone they pay £30 a year to.
I pay you a salary, do I? Well, of course I do. Well, then I should have my money's worth, then. Oh. I can see there's another problem. Out with it.
You haven't actually paid me anything yet, sir.
Oh, mercenary girl! Fetch me my keys now. You want my money in your hand before you will amuse me.
No, sir. Huh? That will not be necessary, sir. Maybe you could ask me questions, sir.
Have you travelled, miss?
No, sir.
All young people wish to travel. Even if they find kindness and food and a fire, they wish to be gone. I've travelled all over the world, monsieur, and it's very overrated.
Yes, sir.
When I was a young man, I was your equal. I had a clear conscience, unpolluted by sin. I took the wrong path. It wasn't my fault that I took it, but I must bear the blame for continuing on it. I think you may have a little of the witch about you. You bewitch my horse. You sit there patiently and would draw out secrets of my past.
I do not wish to pry, sir.
I know, Jay. Do you think me handsome, Jay?
No, sir.
Look carefully. If I were to tell you that I'm worth £20,000... surely the light from the fire would soften my features. Do I not seem to you now the very model of a fashionable man?
I do not think there's anything in science that would allow that, sir. I spoke hastily, sir. I did not mean that I find you repellent. What I meant is that it is the character inside that determines a person. Not the outer show.
Take care, Jane. Don't look too closely inside of me. You might not find anything within at all beautiful. And then where would we be?
I do not mind that. Oh, it's all right.
To Mrs. Fairfax.
Is that grows full.
Does
she live alone in North Tower?
North Tower catches the wind. I don't know why. Makes me shiver just to think of it.
Sometime later, Rochester is marching through the grounds, followed by some servants. He shouts over to Jane.
Miss Eyre, you're required. This way. Hurry up.
Oh, goodness, Miss Eyre. The master has taken it into his head to give Adele a biology lesson. And we all have to hunt beetles.
Of course, I can't understand a word he says. Neither can I, really.
Monsieur Rochester, we are bored with looking at English water beetles. They are not beautiful like the ones in your study. Can I go with you, Monsieur Rochester, when you set off on your travels once more? I will always wear my best dress and everyone will think I'm pretty.
Yes, but if they see you for the shallow little creature that you are, no more substance than one of those meringues over there, well, then they will find you disgusting, my little Parisienne.
They will find me disgusting.
With a disapproving expression, Jane lowers her eyes. Then Rochester takes a seat next to Adele.
You are mistaken, Adele, if you do not think to find interesting creatures here in England. There's a bird. It's a quite nondescript grey colour, and it's accustomed not to moving too quickly, not to draw attention to itself for fear of being beaten. It wishes it could be in a cage. But sooner or later, slowly, day by day, its wings grow very strong. And if you were to look very closely, you would see brilliant scarlet feathers hidden under its drab wings. Until one day, it has grown so confident that it flaps its red wings and flies straight upwards into the sky. And those lucky enough to catch it in flight think that they have caught a glimpse of a firebird.
And then?
Well, then it flies away somewhere warm and never comes back.
I don't think I believe in this bird.
That's true. There's one here at Thornfield in the gardens, if you look very hard.
Madame Fairfax, Monsieur Rochester said the ladies will say I'm disgusting.
Oh, that's nice, dear.
Jane smiles to herself. Then Rochester gets to his feet and she looks up at him.
Come, monsieur. You have something to say?
You should not tease her. She's just a child.
She is. She's also self-obsessed, thoughtless, vain. You made great headway with her, even in the past few months. But look at her. Just like her mother. I saw what the mother became.
That is no reason to despise the child.
You really think? If the blood is tainted, won't I be failing in my duty to her, to let her remain like this, and not to try my best to correct her ways?
She does not deserve to be ridiculed or despised. She's a child. She deserves that you should trust her. That she'll grow and learn and...
Miss Eyre?
No, thank you, Adele.
We shall see, Miss Eyre.
Inside.
Adele, don't run. What's the matter with Sophie?
She doesn't like les malades, the mad people.
Sophie had covered her eyes as they were passing a painting. Jane goes over to take a closer look at it. The picture's filled with images of grotesque and deformed people. Later, Jane's woken by a sound outside her door. She sits up in bed, but hesitates when the sound seems to be getting nearer. Quietly, she slips out of bed, but then jumps a little at the next sound. The sound now seems to be right outside her door. Looking scared, she reaches for a lit candle on a nearby dresser. Slowly, she turns the door handle. It's Pilot.
No, Pilot. No, you don't belong here. Go back to your master.
The next day, she's walking in the grounds when she spots Rochester. She's about to sneak away.
Jane? Come and look at this fellow.
Jane makes her way over to Rochester, who's standing at the edge of a river.
Look, his wings.
A dragonfly.
Seen one like this in the West Indies, but never here. They'll teach me to tease a dove. Come. Sit down with me for a while. Sit.
They sit down together on the grass.
It is now your job, as well as mine, to bring Adele up correctly. I'm going to tell you about her. About where she came from and who she belongs to. Maybe you'll understand.
You do not need to tell me anything.
I know. You understand too much without me saying anything. It's the witch in you. You have to imagine a young man. Well, one who is still youngish and who has made a mistake. Not his fault, but this mistake and the darkness that follows it have set him helter-skelter around the world in search of beauty to help him ease his soul. And he does find beauty, or rather beauty finds him, because, as you will guess, this is a very rich, youngish man. No judgment. No pity. And a look at prized secrets from the blackest souls. Where were we?
Beauty finding the youngish man.
Ah, yes. So, on our whirlwind tour, we alight in Paris. Now, Jane. Imagine, I know it's difficult, imagine a suite of rooms in a particularly gorgeous Parisian hotel. It is upholstered with velvets and furs. Everything is sensuous to the touch, the best that this youngish man's money can buy. It is a summer evening, and there is perfume in the air. The young man breathes in the scent of his lover. Musk and amber. Her name is Celine Vallon. She's very beautiful. She's a dancer. An exotic bird. She dotes on him. And he is passionately in love with her. He's had a fortunate night gambling. And he waits for her now in anticipation of the dark, intoxicating hours ahead. Are you still with me, Jane?
I'm here, sir.
At last, he hears the sound of her return. Only a few more seconds wait until he sees her. An eternity passes.
Bravo, mon cher officier.
Merci, monsieur.
At that very moment, as I stood in the shadows, the green snake of jealousy bit into my heart.
Where is your beast of an Englishman tonight?
Gambling.
Someone else can look at his unpleasant face.
He's very presentable, really, for an Englishman. £20,000 make him very presentable.
From the shadows, Rochester watches Celine and her lover kissing. Back in the present, he glances at Jane.
She wasn't as clear-sighted as you are, Jane. You find me unattractive despite my wealth. You do not know what it is to feel jealousy, do you, Jane? Because you have no idea what it is to love. You have no idea what it is to feel the very beat of someone's heart within one's breast.
No, sir. Do you still love her, sir?
Who?
Celine. Miss Vaughan.
Good God, no. Well, I threw her out of the hotel room and I shot him. On the shoulder or some insignificant place. No, when I saw what a wretched fool she'd meddle with, I knew she could never love me. That's obvious, surely.
And Adele?
She left her in the hotel when she ran off. Celine claimed that I was the father, but a fairly elementary study of biology would prove that impossible. Tell me, Jane. Is there anything about me that remotely resembles Adele? Look at me carefully now.
Jane glances round at Adele on the opposite bank, then looks back at Rochester. She smiles.
No, sir.
She left her in the hotel. A parcel with a label on with my name. What was I to do? Leave her there to starve? I provided for her in France. Then a few months ago, it was necessary to bring her here. She was not my responsibility. But I took her on just the same. So, as her guardian and your master, what do you think of my behavior, Miss Eyre? Did I do the right thing? It was the right thing to do, wasn't it, Jane?
Yes, sir.
Momentarily reassured, he gets to his feet with an intense scowl. Jane watches him walk away. Later, Jane lets herself into Adele's room. The young girl's sleeping soundly, and Jane tucks her in a little before kissing her gently on the forehead. Jane watches her sleep for a few moments, then heads out. Back in her own room, she looks out of the window to see Rochester walking through the gardens, hands behind his back, deep in thought. She takes a seat at her dressing table, studies her reflection for a moment, then lowers her head and smiles to herself. Later that night, Jane's woken once more by noises outside her room.
Go away, Pilot. Pilot, go back to your master.
She opens the door, but the dog's not there. The corridor's steeped in darkness in both directions. She grabs a candle and heads off in the direction of the footsteps.
Who is there?
The dark, wood-panelled walls seem to envelop her as she passes by them. She turns a corner into a stone corridor. She follows the sound of footsteps overhead, then glances down another wood-paneled hallway. Dark shadows envelop the corridor. Heading down the hallway, she speeds up. With a determined look on her face, she turns a corner and arrives at a door.
Hello? Hello?
She opens a door into an opulent room where the four-poster bed in which Rochester is lying is being consumed by flames.